As central bank stimulus draws to a close, when will the economy be healthy enough for higher interest rates?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Opponents of the Federal Reserve's policy of buying bonds to stimulate the economy always worried about the end game. What happens to markets when the stimulus ends? With that time now upon us, it appears the turmoil has come and gone. Drew Mattis, the senior U.S. economist at UBS Securities. Drew, good morning.
Hello.
So what do you think? Can we do the eulogy for the bond buying stimulus? It has expired. It has shuffled off this mortal coil to the great beyond. What do you think?
Well, they're certainly going to taper. And even if they were to do something like a $10 billion cut today and leave something hanging out there, it'll all be done by the end of the year. So we can hold the wake because the patient's going to die.
Which means the economy is strong enough for that, one assumes. What do we know about interest rates? The Fed should issue a statement in about 6 hours' time. What will you be looking for?
Well, we'll be looking for whether or not they remove the considerable time language that they've inserted into their statement. And by that, you know, they've argued that even after they're done quantitative easing, there'll be a considerable time before they try to raise rates. And so one of the things the market's focused on is whether or not that's going to get removed. If it gets removed, people will probably begin to worry that the Fed's going to go sometime late in the first quarter. If they leave it in, people will probably generally assume that things are on pace to go in mid-2015, which is really the economists' expectations.
All right, maybe sometime next summer. We'll watch for the wording. Drew Mattis at UBS Securities, thank you for this.
Thank you.
I have some good news for college seniors and their parents. The job market for 2015 graduates looks like the strongest in many years, with employers looking to make significantly more hires than last year, many of them at higher starting salaries. Those early findings are from Michigan State University's annual survey of employers. However, economists say the good news does not trickle backwards to people who graduated during the down years. Marketplace's Dan Weissman reports.
Salaries for new engineers will be about $6,000 higher than they were for 2009 graduates, says Michigan State's Philip Gardner, who conducted the survey.
There is no way that those people that came in 2009 are going to be at that salary. It would take some pretty nice wage increases,
which have not been plentiful. Gary Bertless is an economist at the Brookings Institution.
There's no doubt that entering the job market, either as a new college graduate or as a new high school graduate at a time of high unemployment, is not the best career move.
Your wages can stay relatively low for 10 years or more. Shulin Wee teaches economics at Carnegie Mellon. She has studied how recession-era grads lose out. She says when jobs are scarce, young people don't get to hop around from career to career as much.
Even if you manage to find a job and you realize that you're not very good at that particular career, now you have problems switching jobs.
So you develop fewer skills and don't get experience with other fields that might be a better fit. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Surveys show that many people choose a new car based on how connected to the internet the vehicle is. Forget about 0 to 60 or initial quality or EPA mileage. From KPBS in San Diego, reporter David Wagner takes a test drive to see how some manufacturers are taking this information aboard.
I'm taking this test drive outside the headquarters of Qualcomm. They're a company built on smartphone chips. But lately, they've been trying to get their chips inside another kind of device. Cars.
Fundamentally, the car is turning into, you know, a smartphone.
That's Senior Vice President Kanwalinder Singh in the passenger seat. I'm behind the wheel of an Audi A3, the first car with its own 4G connection. It has more detailed Google Maps, internet radio, Netflix streaming for the kids in the back seat. Drivers can dictate tweets using voice command, and the car reads incoming text messages.
Hope you're not texting and driving.
Singh says Qualcomm is giving drivers the features they want, and they're doing it in a safe way.
We believe that driver distraction would actually be alleviated by providing these services. When all this is embedded, like it is in this Audi, phone calls destined to you and your smartphone would actually come through the car's antenna and play through the car's audiovisual system, and you would interact through the car.
But some experts say moving these features from the phone to the car doesn't make us any safer.
I think they're really ignoring the powerful effect of cognitive distractions.
Linda Hill leads a team of driving safety researchers at the UC San Diego School of Medicine. She says voice command might cut down on visual distraction, preventing drivers from staring down into their laps. But eye-tracking studies have shown that even when drivers have their hands free and their eyes on the road, their minds can still be elsewhere.
And a recent study looking at that found that the voice-to-text increased driving errors more on a closed driving course than text-to-text did, shockingly.
Hill does like the idea of building one bit of technology into cars, though, an app that disables phones in moving vehicles. In San Diego, I'm David Wagner for Marketplace.
And as investigations proceed into the effects of ultra-fast trading on financial markets, the Wall Street Journal reports today that some hedge funds and fast traders get a hold of financial information from government agencies slightly ahead of the pack. It's from a pair of academic studies looking at how the SEC itself releases official information on its dealings and the filings of the companies it regulates. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.